You're listening to Sphera Now, a podcast for environmental health, safety, and quality professionals around the globe. This is brought to you by Sphera, the largest global provider of integrated risk management software and information services with a focus on environmental health and safety, operational risk, and product stewardship. Now, let's get started.
Welcome to the Sphera Now podcast. I'm James Trani, Sparks Editor-in-Chief. Today on the program, I'm joined by Edward Stern, an advisor on workplace bullying, who previously spent 4 decades developing regulatory policy at the U.S. Labor Department. For 27 of those years, he worked at OSHA, developing regulations and compliance assistance programs. Recently, he was a keynote speaker for the Symposium on Workplace Aggression held by the Oregon Institute of Occupational Health Sciences. Thank you so much for joining me today, Edward.
Well, I'm glad to be speaking with you again, James.
Edward and I worked on a couple of articles back around 2015, and I actually got to meet him when I was in Washington, D.C. for the SHRM conference in 2016. So it's really great talking to you again after all these years.
Yes, well, come on by.
I'd love to go back. Once travel's better, we will do it. So can you tell me a little bit about your background and what piqued your interest in the subject of workplace bullying?
Ordinarily, this would not be one of my topics because I worked on a variety of workplace safety and health topics. This is a little on the edge, but it fell into my lap when I lost a terrifically valuable coworker who was highly educated, very conscientious, and just a great young woman, and on whom I was going to rely for some technical expertise, and she quit her job. So I was horrified to lose her, and I asked her why she was quitting, and she said, if you want to know why I'm quitting, start studying workplace bullying. So this is in the early 2002 or 3 something, and I started collecting academic papers and talking to some of the eminent researchers about their papers around the country. And eventually I got enough understanding that I could write something for union magazines and then later for the general public. Mm-hmm. And I've continued that in retirement simply because I have spent so much time on it. I figured I may as well keep working on it.
For employers, how should workplace anti-bullying initiatives play a role in their overall safety protocols?
I think workplace anti-bullying initiatives can be very valuable to employers in supporting and helping and backing up their safety initiatives, because if they have a good policy. And it only has to be decent. It doesn't have to be perfect. I don't think I've seen any that are perfect. But if they have a decent policy and they make a genuine effort to implement it, of course you have to communicate it before you implement it, then I think they get credibility with employees. And if you have credibility and confidence that you're going to pay attention to these issues, I believe that employees will be more likely to tell their managers and supervisors when they see safety issues that need to be addressed. But if you don't do anything like this, if you have problems and don't respond to the problems that are to which a company is alerted, or you hide your eyes, well, then the company loses credibility, and that means their employees are not going to trust the leadership on matters of safety either. So for that reason, in my mind, having a workplace bullying policy ought to be one of the leading indicators of whether or not they're going to have a safe workplace.
Interesting. And so how prolific is workplace bullying, and how do you define bullying? I mean, in the schoolyard, it's pretty obvious bullying is you push a kid who's younger than you, but in the workplace, it can also include microaggressions, is that right?
Yes, it can be very subtle. And indeed, it's a little difficult to define it. So I had that question before me some years ago from an acquaintance who was a law professor at Georgetown. And I thought about my definition, and I was not happy with it. And I thought further on it, and I decided to organize it into a table so that people could see a variety of behaviors just in the categories of verbal and nonverbal, aggressive behavior, bullying and abusive behavior. So that's one way of looking at it, and a crosscut on visible and hidden behavior. So that's a 2x2 table. And then I add another layer down below of just the behaviors, the abusive conduct that only a supervisor can do and that your coworker cannot do to you. So I have a 6-way table, and I put that in an article somewhere in the workplace bullying styles matrix. But I think then you fill in different kinds of behavior of what's visible and verbal, and it can be visible and not verbal, including nonverbal aggressions. And it's interesting that after, in the course of speaking for the Oregon Symposium at the end of May, I saw that there was some definite interest in understanding better the kind of aggression that's done just by expression. And people absolutely feel it when they're given a cold stare or a sneer. And a sneer is so old. It's such an ancient thing that even animals do it. And Charles Darwin wrote about this in a book on the emotions, the expression of emotions in man and animals. I ran into that and looking up, I found it when I was studying sneers and violence.
So let me ask you this. So obviously we're still in the middle of the COVID-19 pandemic. Obviously there's been a lot of news related to the call to end racism once and for all, and everything that's going on in the world. Just now we're reopening, our companies are starting to reopen. Are you concerned at all that there's a bigger potential for workplace bullying as people return to the office after a few months?
Yes, actually I am. I, for a couple of reasons. One that occurred to me and one that occurred to one of my colleagues who alerted me to her concern recently, and she was a labor lawyer, a very shrewd labor lawyer, and also a union official for some time. Let me deal with her thought first before I come to my own, and that is she was concerned that that people coming back to the workplace will be anxious. It's quite a change for people. They're coming back to something new, and just that anxiety and edginess will prompt bullies to be more aggressive. I think that's a possibility. I don't reject her hypothesis on that. My thought was, before I heard my colleague's thought, was that these bullies miss the opportunity to torment others. It's something that makes them feel good. They don't do it accidentally. It's done because they need to abuse and degrade others because it makes them feel better about themselves. Consequently, they've missed it, and I think it's quite possible that we will see a good surge of it when they come back. But even for these folks, it may take them a little while to hit their stride just because, you know, everybody will be a little off coming back and feeling a little strange. But they'll be there.
I mean, especially, I mean, you go back into the workplace, people are wearing masks, and then you see somebody who's not wearing a mask, or vice versa. I could see the potential for people trying to pick on those people, kind of individually take it on themselves to make a point.
Oh, I have no doubt. There are people who feel strongly that, I mean, I talked to another friend who happens to be an attorney, a smart and successful attorney, and she told me the other day she didn't believe in the masks and the disease at all. Now, mind you, she's an attorney, not a doctor, but I was sort of startled because I live across the street from the National Institutes of Health, and I have neighbors who are health scientists, and I know a lot of people, and they're serious. One of my friends is a virologist, an older gentleman who's now retired, but long, long time student of virology, and not just a student, an eminent researcher. And they're, it's not a joke. You know, they're serious, and they have good ideas. And if I certainly agree with you, James, that there could be some controversy and mocking and demeaning as a result of this.
Definitely. And just for the record, we do recommend wearing masks in the workplace because until there's a vaccine or at least some kind of drug to help cope with this, it's going to take everybody's efforts to keep everybody safe.
I will not disagree with you on that. I spent a lot of years doing projections of risk and how exposure to various hazardous materials will affect people. It involves statistics and probability and so forth, and the same rules apply here. You don't have to reinvent statistics and probability to figure out that if you're exposed to a lot of people who are not covered, whose faces are not covered, well, then you have an increased chance that at least one of them, you only need one, at least one of them will be a danger to you.
Definitely. So I know this is not your area of expertise, but I am curious, with more people working from home these days, are you concerned at all about the rise of cyberbullying?
It certainly could be there. I offer this thought to you. That is, I have not seen cyberbullying in the office because I think it's too easy for the IT people to figure out where it's coming from, if it's coming from inside. Mm-hmm. But if people are at home, it may be easier to, safer for bullies to harass them from outside. So they wouldn't be doing, they wouldn't be using internal systems. But whether it's happening, I'm sorry, I just haven't studied that.
That's totally understandable. I just was curious about your thoughts. So for an employer, what are the risks of not taking bullying, seriously? I mean, obviously, no employer is going to advocate for bullying, but what about employers that don't take this very seriously?
Well, there is a risk, and that is even when you have a substantial number of people out of work, you still want to keep, if you've got the company running and you have trained staff, you want to keep them there. You want to keep the talent, and if you mistreat people, there will be other opportunities for them. And the better the people are, the more talented, more experienced, the easier it will be for them to find other jobs. So if you have someone who just, because of their insecurity, typically, these are especially the narcissistic personalities, because of their insecurity, want to torment others, only one or two at a time, and treat the others nice. But if they're going to do that, eventually they will drive people away, and they will be driving away the people who make the bullies feel less comfortable. And who are they? Those are people who are well-educated, who have good skills at working with others. Even appearance, even frankly looks, might play a role in that. But my goodness, if you have people with experience and education and good social skills and you drive them away, then the company loses. And by the way, I spoke with the head of Minnesota state HR a couple years ago while I was collecting information on this, and he said, "Hey, we compete with the private sector, and we want to attract and keep the best talent we can, and that's one of the reasons they developed and promoted their respectful workplace policy. Their policy is respectful workplace policy." And then inside it lists all the bad behavior, which is workplace bullying or aggressive conduct.
What are the top three or four things you'd like to see in a anti bullying initiative at a company?
Oh boy, that's a good one. Number one, once you have it, communicate it on a regular basis, at least once a year, to all the employees. Put it up on the company website so people can see it easily, including your competitors and the general public. This gets you a little respect. So that's, if you have something, communicate it. Next, when you have a policy, it's not enough just to write about and address the issues of yelling and shouting and cursing at people. Those are obvious things, and that does happen. I have been involved in working on cases like that. But that's not the only thing that happens. Some of the behavior is undermining, it's sabotage of people that you want to torment because of personal envy or out of retaliation for something someone said. And so these are subtle. A person could be targeted and not even know they're targeted for a little while, but eventually they catch on. So you have to, in my mind, it's not enough to just go for the clear, visible and actions, but also the hidden actions. And there's another one that's addressed by the Tennessee and the model policy of the Tennessee Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Regulations. They have a very good model policy, and they speak about acts and omissions. So simply refusing to respond to somebody who has a right, to an employee who has every reason to expect that the person he's trying to reach will speak with him or talk to him or meet with him or answer his telephone calls or her telephone calls. If you don't do that, that's also workplace aggression because you're cutting that person off. And they know it. They may not realize it right away, but they'll catch on.
That would be an example of a more subtle form of workplace bullying.
Yes. I'll tell you, I got caught on that myself years ago. I needed to speak to someone. They said, oh, I can't right now. I'll get back to you. And then a couple of weeks go by. I say, wait a minute. We need to talk about this. This is important for part of the role that I'm responsible for. And 4 weeks went by, and one of the senior officials absolutely refused to talk to me. And I thought, oh, my goodness, they faked me out. I should have realized sooner, but I didn't.
So how do you get that kind of buy-in from senior leadership when it comes to anti-bullying initiatives?
I think you want to encourage the corporate leadership or the organizational leadership, it may be governmental or non-governmental, you want to encourage them to realize that, and to keep in mind that recruiting and keeping people cost money. When I spend a lot of time recruiting people and training people, and if you have good people there and they leave because they're not well treated, well, you've lost an investment in there. It's not even a matter of morality. It is a matter of morality, but forget the morality of treating people with common decency. But you're losing money when you lose talent. And if it happens to the government instead of private sector, you may not be losing money, but you're losing the ability to carry out the mission of the federal or state or municipal government office that you're responsible for, because you are losing some of the talent that you would otherwise have. And this absolutely happens. And it just means that whatever organization you have, you're not going to be as effective. And one other thing is, when you end up with lawsuits, then it's embarrassing for the company or agency, whoever it is. That's one thing. And also, employees can speak their mind about the company they left on Glassdoor and other similar spots where they can rate the companies. And that has the effect of deterring some people from applying to the company for jobs. You're looking to replace somebody. Somebody looks at what they read about bad behavior at the company. They say, oh, I don't want to apply there. And I know this happens. I've talked to people about that.
Do you see a lot of lawsuits related to workplace bullying?
I am familiar with some, and typically employees, you know, the average person just doesn't have the resources to do this. But if they're in a situation where they have a union that can help them and the union has funds to have a lawyer, well, that gives them an advantage. Or once in a while, the employee, him or herself, is an attorney and will take the case into court by him or herself. And I have seen that happen too. And at that point, you would expect that HR would start paying attention. But honest to goodness, I know of one situation in which one supervisor who seemed to have a problem with women. I want to tell you, I'm not speaking about OSHA because I dealt with workplace issues in a variety of agencies. I was asked to help, so I'm not talking about OSHA. I think we did pretty well. But they had a supervisor who had a problem with women, and as a result, he drove away three women. Each of them filed, and because they viewed it as an EEO thing, they filed discrimination cases in federal court, and they settled one out of court. They went into court on the next one and lost, and here they let the person do yet another case. And before, on the steps of the court, you know, before they're ready for trial, again, they lost. That outfit lost $2 billion just because of that supervisor. Finally, they had the sense to say, well, you know what, maybe he shouldn't be a supervisor.
Did you say billion or million?
Two million. Just,
okay.
It's not huge money, but it helped to compensate the people who felt they were discriminated against. But it wasn't, I think these cases were that I'm thinking of were brought as under the rubric of EEO, but really it was because partly discrimination and partly workplace bullying and just harassment.
Is that one of the most egregious examples you've seen?
Oh, I thought that's as a continuing case, that the organizational leadership just turned a blind eye to. I can't think of a worse example. I've seen people who were I'm familiar with cases where a supervisor was yelling and cursing and screaming at an employee. As a matter of fact, in this one involved, they were both attorneys. So fortunately not our OSHA attorneys. They're really a very good group. But another group of attorneys, and behaving in a most appalling fashion. But that's not the way this person ordinarily behaved. And when the employee raised it with the union and they invited me to sit in, everybody sat down with HR. The woman described her situation, and the boss said, I don't think he said I'm sorry. He said, it won't happen again. It won't happen again. And as a result, there was no grievance or EEO complaint because the target was a woman, also a senior attorney. There was no formal complaint filed against the guy because he said it wouldn't happen. And to my knowledge, it didn't. So he lost it one day, but maybe that was really a very unusual situation for that guy. Anybody can have a bad day.
We all can have bad days. So where can people go to learn more about workplace bullying?
Well, there's a variety of things to look at. As a very nice policy, short and sweet, I really like the National Institutes of Health office that's called CIVIL. That's just the name, CIVIL.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just Google NIH CIVIL, workplace violence, they have a short, sweet, but subtle policy that I discuss with them on many occasions. And I'm impressed because they covered some of these, many of these issues, both actions and omissions. And I think words and stares and sabotage. They've got that, and they also wrapped all of that workplace bullying, psychological violence, in with their workplace violence program, and they did it in a couple of pages. It's really very short and sweet. That's a terrific little example. But another example I like very much, as they say, is this model policy from the Tennessee Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Regulation. And the best way to find it is just say, search on TACIR, that's their initials, mm-hmm. model policy, and up pops this policy that was done in response to the state law. Tennessee, I believe, was the first to initiate a policy for governmental, state, and local governments. And then it later, some years later, I think in 2019, they extended it to the private sector. And this model policy is a marvelous little example. It's hard to beat.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for that. Is there anything else you'd like to add today about workplace bullying?
I offer one thought, and that is, it is useful to go back to people who are abusive and say to them, you know, I don't know if you realize, but what you're saying is very offensive. You know, you don't know for sure what's going to happen, but it's worth a try. And for those people who are entirely wrapped up in themselves, and who have a sense of grandiosity, and they just feel that they're terrifically important, then you look for the character traits of a narcissistic personality disorder. And one of my friends, who's a psychiatrist and was a director of a psychiatric department for a hospital, told me years ago, when I asked him about it, how do you deal with these people? He said, Edward, you can't. Don't think that you can influence these people. They are very, very difficult to change. So from that kind of person, you better start thinking about getting away from them.
I concur. I did some research on this a number of years ago, and I came to the same conclusion. If you're dealing with certain people with this narcissistic personality problem, it can be very cumbersome.
Yeah. I had run into one of those people, and I had to deal with the person for a while. And the person was so strange, I called one of my friends who is a psychotherapist. I said, come down to Chinatown, I'll buy you lunch. And I take advantage of my friends, I admit that. And I described, and he asked me, do you see this? Do you see that? Yes, no, yes, no. And he said, well, take a look. This is a couple years ago when they had the definition under the DSM-4. He said, take a look at the narcissistic personality disorder traits. And over a period of time, we saw that this person exhibited 9 out of 9. You needed 5 to be classified, and this individual exhibited 9 out of 9. So I thought to myself, I didn't know if there was. I think you were ahead of me, James, on this, realizing you can't deal with it. But when I saw my friend, a psychiatrist, at a family picnic, I said, hey, do you have any advice? And he said, try to avoid them, because you're not going to be able to deal with them.
Exactly. And I just wanted, one closing thought I had was, we talk about this quite a bit, is when you do lose workers, you also lose that knowledge base. And
oh, absolutely.
When you're talking about workplace safety, that's so important.
Well, the people walk out, they take away of course, if you degrade them and humiliate them and sabotage them, they're demotivated, so they're no longer engaged. They're not going to offer you the good ideas because the company doesn't care about them, and so they're not going to care about their company. So they're no longer engaged employees, which are the source of ideas. And so you lose that, and then when they leave, out they go with their knowledge that they've gained from years. And that's a loss. You don't have the talent. You don't have the knowledge. You're absolutely right. And then you have to try to find somebody to come in. And I have seen people like this. The bullies chase away people year after year. And unfortunately, HR too often is thinking their role is to protect managers, and they need to start thinking about protecting the organization and the mission of the organization, not just individual managers.
Right. And with newer employees who might feel bullied, it costs a lot of money to just bring on board a new employee. So if you have someone who's new and they start a job and then 6 months later they're gone because they've been bullied, you have to start that whole process again, and that's not cheap.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's money down the drain. And I do have one other thought on this, and that is some of the people who are bullies, who are unhappy with themselves for one reason or another, and they want to take it out on others, some of those people are knowledgeable people. And one of the ways that you can improve the situation is to move them out, if they're supervisors, move them out of being supervisors and managers into senior advisory positions, non-managerial, but well-paid supervisory or non-supervisory and non-managerial positions. I have seen that work, and I can think of one highly knowledgeable, highly intelligent, and educated person who's just treated people terribly. When that person was made a non-supervisory senior expert, the individual maybe it took a couple weeks, and this is not somebody I worked with directly, but I knew people who worked with the individual over a relatively short period of time, the person was happier and was nice to people. So it turned out to be a good thing for that individual not to be a supervisor.
Interesting.
But the company still kept the expertise. So it was a win every way, all the way around.
That's a great, great example. Well, I really appreciate your time and your sharing your expertise on workplace bullying with us today, Edward. It was great talking to you again. Thank you so much.
Well, it was my pleasure. I'm happy to talk to you again.
All right. Thank you so much.
Sure. Take care. Bye-bye.
This concludes this episode of Sphera Now. For more content on topics such as these, we encourage you to visit sphera.com, sphera.com. While there, feel free to click contact and submit feedback on this podcast or suggest topics you'd like to see us cover. Thank you and have a great rest of your day.